Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for coming to the shiur Wednesday night. It is also Erev, right before Thanksgiving, a holiday in this country where many of you might have sat back at home, but you came out to learn the Shomrei Torah based measure. So yashar koach to all of you for being here. So maybe he says, maybe I should not be so impressed. That being said, I am impressed. Thank you for coming out on a holiday Wednesday night, that's just, let's just say harder maybe than a normal Wednesday night. So it's certainly very much noticed. Thank you so much for coming. Vayetze is how we're going to start the shiur this evening, in a most serious, sensitive topic. We're going to try to speak about balancing, from a halachic perspective, maintaining safety on one hand, trying to free hostages on another hand, and not ignoring human emotions on another hand. So the proper balance between those two things. Again, maintaining safety, national security. We obviously want to save hostages. And finally, there are a lot of human emotions that are being thrown around, and we can't ignore them, or maybe we should ignore them. So we'll start with the Parsha, and we'll see something fascinating in the Parsha. We'll learn a classical sugya and shas about Pidyon Shavuim, redeeming captives. And then we'll learn what the contemporary poskim like Rav Shechter and Rav Asher Weiss have to say about that particular sugya. And then we'll swing back to some of the more Musar Machshava life lessons to learn from the sugya. Parshas Vayetze describes how Yaakov had to marry Leah against his will, and naturally he loved Rachel more. Vayar Hashem kisnua Leah, Hashem noticed, he saw that Leah was hated. Vayiftach es Rachma v'Rachel akara. So because Leah was hated, Hashem specifically had mercy on her and allowed her to have children. Fatar Leah v'teled ben. And listen to the pain Leah is going through. The Torah just said black and white that she was hated. Now, it's a big machlokus what that means. But at a minimum, she was not loved as much as Rachel. And she gives birth. Vateled bein vatikra shmo Reuven. Why Reuven? Now Hashem, ki ra'ah Hashem on you. Now Hashem will have seen my suffering, and now Yaakov will love me. But guess what? Didn't work 100%, did it? Vatar o vateled bein. She has Shimon. And what's the pshat behind the name Shimon? Ki shama Hashem ki snua anochi. Another name based on her feelings of loneliness, of feeling non-love from her husband, hated, neglected. And the third name also, Vatahar, when she has Levi. Why does she name Levi Levi? Well, at least now, Ye'i love Ishi Eli. At least now my husband will accompany me. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. So you're learning Leah's intense pain. She's suffering. It's emerging through the naming of her children. The Ramban explains, what does that mean that Leah was hated? What does that mean? You know why? The Ramban has a fascinating observation, because Leah was not fully innocent. What do we classically say? Rachel was a big tzaddikus for giving Leah the signs. And therefore, instead of Leah being embarrassed, she was able to marry Yaakov. But what's the flip side of that? Leah should have told Yaakov. And the Ramban on his commentary says that Yaakov is upset. Yaakov is upset. And you can understand, V'lachach sinah Yaakov. That's why Yaakov hated her. But Hashem understood her motive. Her motive was a good perspective, an altruistic perspective. Her motive was to marry the tzaddik. You see what Hashem does? He has mercy on her. He has mercy on her. Even though she technically was partially guilty, Hashem had mercy on her. And I want you to start thinking a little bit in the back of your mind about, do we have mercy on victims, family members of hostages, even if we think they're wrong? How far does mercy go in halacha? And we're going to imitate the Ribbono Shel Olam, obviously, in terms of our midos. We always want to emulate the ways of Hashem. Hashem sees that Leah is hated. He understands that she was coming from a good place and therefore had pity on her. Wow. The Radak. Why was she hated? Again, a more technical answer, that when you are being compared to the sister and you're loved in second place, that's considered hatred. And therefore, Vayiftach es Rachma. So according to the Radak, why did Hashem have mercy on her? Just because she felt like she was in second place. So a little less dramatic than the Ramban's pshat. But ultimately, both the Radak and the Ramban would argue that Hashem had mercy on Leah simply because she was suffering. According to the Radak, she was in second place. According to the Ramban, she had good motives, even though she might have made a mistake. Whoa. Okay, moving on. Rachel sees that Leah has children. She cannot bear it. Vatikanei Racha ba'achosa. She's jealous. And what does she tell Yaakov? Hava li banim. Give me children. V'im ayin. If I don't have children, meita anochi. I'm dead. Whoa. Now, what's pshat behind that request? And what's pshat behind Yaakov's response? Vayichar af Yaakov b'rachel. Yaakov gets upset with Rachel. What am I, God? I'm the one holding you back from having children. What, you think I'm Hashem? We're going to lean Rashi in the Ramban. We're going to emphasize the Ramban. And we're going to, again, highlight the need to not ignore human emotion. According to Rashi, Rachel was arguing. V'chikach asa avichel imecha. Is this how Yitzchak treated Rivka when she was barren? V'alo hitpalel aleha. Didn't your father, Yitzchak Avinu, daven for Rivka when she was struggling? And what is Yaakov's response? That was totally different. There, Yitzchak had no children. So he was davening. Here, I have children. And what does that imply? What does that imply? It's not my fault. Abba lo hayali lo banim. Ani yesh lebanim. That's what he meant. Mimcha mana v'lo mimeni. Thank you so much, Rabbi Weintraub. Mimeich mana, from you, Hashem has prevented children. V'lo mimeni. It's not my fault. Wow, charif. The Ramban quotes Rashi and asks a question we probably all would ask. What, you don't daven for people who need help? What? So Yaakov, because it's not your fault, therefore what? You don't daven for her? I bolded this. V'chi ha-tzadikim eino mispalalim ba'ar acherim? Elio, Hanavi, Elisha, right? What happened when women came to them? Suffering, because they could not have children or similar issues. Of course you daven for even strangers. What, a tzadik has ever been asked to daven on behalf of a barren woman before? Well, Yaakov, well, it's not really my fault, Rachel. And therefore what? The Midrash actually criticizes Yaakov for this. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kach onin et ha-me'ikot. Is this the way you respond to a woman in suffering? Chayecha, says Hashem, I swear, shebanecha atidin la'amod b'fnei bana. Your children, i.e. the b'nei Leah, b'nei Bila, b'nei Zilpah, will all have to bow down to her kid, i.e. Yosef, will be the one who has power over your sons. And here the Ramban is saying that Yaakov was mistaken on his level for not properly empathizing with her pain. You don't speak that way to a woman in pain. Now again, the Ramban explains that what Yaakov thought Rachel did wrong, whereby Rachel demanded of response. I demand that you pray hard enough for me to get a kid. And Yaakov was upset because ein tefilas tzadikim biyadam shetishma al kopanim. It doesn't work that way, Rachel. Okay, you want to call me a tzadik? You want to call me one of the three of us? All right, I know my own stats, but it doesn't mean I'm a miracle god. It doesn't work that way. And here's the key line: uba avur shedibra derech gagui hanashim. Because you're crying to me like women do, ahuvot. And you're essentially, here's the key word, manipulating me. You're tugging on my emotional side. You're trying to nag at me, saying, like, come on! And Yaakov's backbone steps up and says, I'm not letting my emotions get the best of me. You don't tell God what to do. Your emotions are real, but you don't get to tell God what to do. Whoa. Now that is a very, very fascinating Ramban and a beautiful Midrash. And it directly, in my humble opinion, relates to everything that we're dealing with right now. As we literally sit on Wednesday night, November 22nd, 2023, a hostage deal has already been delayed one day since 2 hours ago. And you have emotional pain that is searing pain. And it is affecting the way the Israeli government is operating. And you have Israeli government officials being yelled at by members of families whose family members are held hostage in Gaza right now. And the question is, how do those emotions affect our policy? Because on one level, Hashem criticized Yaakov. Did you really just respond that way to a crying woman? Where was your empathy? And yet you continue reading the Ramban, and it sounds like Yaakov Avinu had a pretty appropriate response, meaning, of course I hear your pain, but you didn't ask the right way. And this is a fascinating question. And I'm going to say, even in halacha, do emotions affect our decisions? You know, when you have the chassidim versus the misnagdim, right, kind of thing. The misnagdim will say, a halacha is a halacha. And the chassidim will say, yeah, where's the heart? Where's the heart? Right? It's a similar concept, right? Obviously not. I'm just using that as a mushroom. So I wanted to use the Parsha as a springboard to just help us understand that emotions are real. Yaakov Avinu was even criticized in this week's Parsha, according to Chazal, for not being sensitive enough. Yet Racha might have been trying to use emotional, we'll say, strategy in an inappropriate way. And Yaakov Avinu's response might have been very appropriate to say, I get that you're upset, but maybe you're going too far. All right, so let's learn some classical shas, rishonim, about, you know, these dinim, about hostages. And we'll try to come away with at least enough background to speak as if we're educated on the topic, at least to a degree. Then again, we'll swing back to contemporary poskim, and then we'll go back to hashkafa. Here it is. Maseches Bava Basra.
Say the Israeli government is not all right.
Yeah, you know, again, they,
even though there's a book written about the halakha, we're gonna learn
that the poskim defer to the Israeli government on this one. You'll see. All right, AB, but the point is well taken. But again, in the past, the poskim have been consulted. Radio Yosef's Tshuva and then Tebi Tshuva does say that they were, the Gadolim were consulted. I mean, again, I'm not allowed to say what I know. Again, I'm not permitted to tell you my secret, you know, again, the IDF is in touch with me, you know, every 24 hours, I'm one of the secret poskim, you know, again, you know too much already, actually. All right, so let's go on. Bava Basra Ches, going on to Ches Amid Beis. Ifra Hormiz, Ime de Shevua Malka, Shad Arnaka de Dinrei Lakme de Rav Yosef. So you had a woman who is the mother of a foreign official. She sent a lot of money to Rav Yosef and said, do a big mitzvah with this wad of cash. Yes, Rav Yosef, my mitzvah rabbi. Well, what's a mitzvah rabbi? You want me to do a big mitzvah with this money? Well, he asked his rabbi. Abaye said, you know what the big mitzvah to do? You know, it is pidyon shvuyim, mitzvah rabbi. That's the big mitzvah. You want to do a big, you have extra cash flow? You want to do like a super awesome mitzvah? A mitzvah rabbi? Redeem some captives. Okay. That's fascinating. That's great. And the Gemara says there are actually 3 degrees of, we'll say, very bad plights. And being a captive is actually the worst one of them. Cherev kasha mimavis. If you die, so that's not as bad as dying by a sword. So if you die regularly, okay, that's not as bad as dying by a sword. And ra'av kasha mecherev. And if you die by a sword, again, the Gemara says, well, at least you die instantly if you die by a sword. And if you die naturally, at least you don't get mutilated, you know. But if you get by a sword, you're all, you know, mutilated. But it's instant. If you die by hunger, it's even worse than a cherev. Shevi, captivity, kasha mikulam. But being a captive is worse than all of them. Dechulu isnehube, because they all apply to you. Says Rashi, the one who took you prisoner could do whatever he wants to you. Im lamaves, im lacherev, im lara'av. So you have the worst of all 3, basically. He can do whatever he wants. You're at his mercy. So that's why it's a mitzvah rabbah to redeem captives. Okay. Now, Tosfos says an amazing chiddush here. He says, well, if it's such a mitzvah rabbah, why is it not included in the list in Maseches Megillah that you should be able to sell a sefer Torah to redeem captives? Pidyon Shuvim should have been on that list. A sefer Torah is the highest level of sanctity. You could only sell a sefer Torah if you're going to use that money for Torah or marriage. What about using that that money to free captives? Says Tosfos, yes, it should be on the list. And the only reason the Gemara did not put it on the list is because it's obvious. Shema, perhaps milsa de pshitahi, full of itzrich lemisne. Tosfos over there in Baba Basra. Fascinating. And at this point of the shiur, in the halachic part of the shiur, we're going to emphasize, we'll say, the pro freeing the hostage poskim. Mefurish Gemara that says Pidyon Shvim is a mitzvah rabbah. And here's the Rambam. Ironically, where's the Rambam? Hilchos Matanos Aniyim. When you speak about giving tzedakah, that's where these halachas come up. Pidyon Shvuyim kodem leparnasas aniyim v'lechsosam. If you have X amount of money and you have the option either to give it to poor people, to give them clothing, or to redeem captives, redeeming captives trumps all. The Ein Mitzvah Rabbah Kemo Pidyon Shivuyim. To free hostages is the ultimate mitzvah. It's included in, you know, helping the hungry and the thirsty, the naked, because a captive, again, is as unfortunate, the negative plight of all of these people. And if you hide your eyes from those who need your help and they're captive, you're over on Lo Ta'am Meis Levavcha and Lo Ta'am Ar Dem Reyecha, and he lists like 60 surim. Lav after lav that you're violating. Essentially, if you're an Orthodox Jew, if you're a Torah Jew, you redeem captives. And if you turn a blind eye, you are violating so many averos. And that should not be surprising then, that the Shulchan Aruch, Yerodei Reishin Beis, Sif Aleph, Paskins like the Rambam, says you got to redeem the captives. And the only thing I'm going to just point out that he adds, he essentially is quoting the Rambam verbatim, but in Reishin and Beis, Sif Gimel, here's where the Shulchan Aruch says something that's chilling. Kol rega shema'acher liftos ha-shvuyim, every moment that you delay in redeeming a captive, hecha de'efshar lahaktim, or you could have done it sooner, have ki'ilu shofech damim. It's comparable to murder. The clock is ticking. And again, to zoom out for a second, on a political level right now, the people who are very pro the, we'll say, the hostage deal right now, their major argument is, do you not realize that we've already discovered another dead body of a hostage? Time is ticking. We don't have time to play with here. The more time you wait, the more time we lose, the more likely it is that people will get killed. The hostages will get killed. That is a very halachic answer. It's in the Shulchan Aruch. If you delay, it's like murder. Whoa. Okay, that's part number one of the halachic part of the shir, the pro-hostage deal. But there's another mission in Shas, Maseches Gidur Mem Hem and Aleph. Ein podin es ha-shivuyim, yeser al kol demein. You can't redeem a captive for more than his value. For more than his value. Why? Mipnei tikkun ha-olam. Because it's going to mess up the world. See what that means? Similarly, ve'en mavrichen es ha-shivuyim. You can't go in and do a mission to free some of the captives. Again, because of tikkun ha-olam. Or Shimon Galil says, mipnei tikkun takanas ha-shivuyim. Meaning, what might have thought to be a good idea at first glance, the Mishnah is saying, no. Look at the bigger picture. What does it mean? Mipnei tikkun ha-olam. The Gemara has two possibilities. This is Gidur Mem Hem and Aleph. Maybe duchka de tzibura, financially, what's going to happen? The captors are going to demand a very high fee, and now it's going to cost Jews a lot of money that they don't have. O Dilma, the second answer, if you give in to the demands, what, of the terrorists, what's going to happen? They're going to do it again. Exactly. O Dilma, Mishum, Delo, Ligarvu, Velaisi, Tfei. It's going to happen again and again and again if you give in. And by the way, if you go in and try to free some of the hostages, what might happen? You can't do that. Unless there's one hostage. If there's one hostage, so Rishim Galil would be okay with that. But we're going to possibly maybe not like that. Again, the idea is that if you're able to go in on a mission and free, 50% of the hostages, you've essentially completely sentenced the other 50% to death, right? Meaning, it's not a success if you free some of the hostages, but then negatively affect the rest of the hostages. That's Ein Mavrichim, somewhat less famous din. So now all of a sudden, without right, exactly. But, I mean, you're going in and just like trying to just like, you know, barge down the door. You know, like what they try to do with Nachshon Waxman, Hashem Yikom Damo. He was only one soldier who was captive, and they tried to go in on a rescue mission, and it was failed, unfortunately. Not for now. But if there would have been a few people in that room, that would have been what we're talking about. We don't do that, lest it lead to the saving of one at the expense of the others. So right now we're seeing the second opinion over here, the second side of the coin, where we don't always free captives. The Rambam paskin that there's no greater form of tzedakah. Okay, that's true. At the same time, we don't mess the world over for that, right? You can't have a global downfall on the net value of harming society because of it. Yikes. Very complicated. The Gemara in Gittin and Ches, and again, I hope I control my emotions on this one. Tana Rabbana Maisa Rabbi Shua ben Chananya. Shalach lekrach gadol she beromi. Rabbi Shua ben Chananya went to Rome, and they told him there was one Jewish captive, a boy, a little boy, who was taken captive in Rome. He was known to be particularly beautiful. When he went there, Rabbi Shua ben Chananya started a pasuk, and the boy was able to complete the pasuk. And he said, this kid is worth saving. He saved him. He paid an exorbitant price for him. Because he said, Rav Yoshua ben Chananya said, I'm not leaving without this kid. He saved him. And he ended up becoming the great Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. Now you can learn that as the halachic way by saying, listen, this kid was able to finish a pasuk in Yeshayahu like that. Clearly he's an Eloi. Let's save this kid. He's a special kid. And he ended up becoming Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, a Tana. Wow. But just today, I was reading that in Gaza, the Chayalim, when they're watching the Palestinian civilians leave towards Egypt or wherever, when they're running out of Gaza, the Chayalim are standing there, and in Hebrew they're saying, anyone who understands Hebrew, run to me, don't be afraid. And it's mamish this Gemara in real time. It's not a pasuk in Yeshayahu. But Chayalim are speaking the native tongue of little boys, of little innocent children who are captive. And they're saying in Hebrew, if you understand what I'm saying, come to me. Unreal. Unreal. All right. That being said, it's a halacha. Because the question is, that should be an exception to it. What did Rabbi Shua ben Chananya just do? He just violated the halacha. How did he violate the halacha? By doing what? He paid more than the value to free the kid. So why is that okay? Why is that okay? What would you say? Why is that okay? I thought you're not supposed to do that, right? Didn't we say you're not supposed to free a captive more than his value, right? How do you determine the value? So let's assume how much you would be sold as a slave on the market. That was pretty common back in. That's what some of the posts can say. That's a mainstream view. But the Aruch HaShulchan says practically we don't really know. We don't really know. We don't have a value. But we'll say the going rate for a captive. So as crazy as that sounds. Now, the Tosfos ask this question, and they say the following. Let's try to get to Tosfos' answers. So what is the deal with Rabbi Shua ben Chananya? How did he redeem that little boy? Number one, Lefisha Muflag B'Chachma. He might have been a unique exception. Why? Because he was uniquely brilliant. So maybe we should redeem a boy or Talmud Chacham, who's uniquely gifted. Inam, here's a key line that's going to have tremendous impact on tonight's shiur. B'Sha'at Chorban HaBayit Lo Shayach Delo Ligruvu. When it was the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, we don't really care about the fact that it might lead to more terrorism. Why not? Because what was going on during the Chorban HaBayis? It was just like terrorism was going on as it was. So when everything is just chaos, we don't care about more chaos. So can you already see how that's going to affect today's year and today's situation? But here is the key line. There's another Tosfos in Gittin. The Tosfos I was just quoting, it was Gittin Memhei. There's another Tosfos in Gittin. That would be the third answer. Do you know what another exception might be? When do you redeem a captive even for more than his value? If he might be killed. So we have three exceptions to the rule. Starting point is don't redeem a captive for more than his value. However, Tosfos has illustrated that you might be able to redeem a captive for more than his value if A, he might be a unique Talmud Chacham, B, as it is, there's chaos all around you anyway, and it's not going to lead to more violence because we're already dealing with a very violent situation. And C, another Tosfos has addressed, well, maybe if we're afraid that his life is at stake. Wow. Meaning the time is ticking argument. The Ramban over there in Gideon disagrees with the third approach of Tosfos, because we assume that what? Every captive is potentially going to die, right? So the Ramban does not really understand why that's a factor, because we always assume that any captive might be killed, and the Mishnah still said, don't redeem the captive for more than his value. So that answer might not hold, but it might. It's fascinating how the post can deal with that one. All right, now, parenthetically, there is a very also pertinent halacha where it comes to marriage. In the ksuba, a man does pledge to redeem his wife if she is taken captive. And again, so family members also might be in a different category, whereby you don't have to limit redeeming yourself. Included in yourself is your wife. So let's say you're a gazillionaire, right? And you say, listen, I'm going to redeem myself for a gazillion dollars, you know, and so to that might be okay, because you're allowed to redeem yourself for whatever you want. It's you. You can do whatever you want for you. And that might apply to your wife. And the question would be, you know, let's say Rahman, let's say one of the captives' families was extraordinarily wealthy. So can you argue that for their own kid or whatever, there's such an exception? You know, based on this argument, potentially yes, potentially not. All right. So we're now in this part of the shir where we're anti the hostage deal. Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya Reishon Beis. Ein Podin Shvuin Yoshe Midei Deim. You can't redeem a hostage for more than his net value, because if you do, it's going to lead to more terror. But again, who are the exceptions? You could redeem yourself for whatever you want, a Talmud Chacham, or someone who is not yet a Talmud Chacham, but he's very, very, very bright and might become a Talmud Chacham, right? And the Ramah says, and maybe your wife also is like you. And again, the next Sif and Shulchan Aruch, Reishon Beis Hei, you can't just go in on a rescue mission, because we're afraid that if you save some hostages, you're going to worsen the condition for any other hostages or any future hostages. You're not helping it. Oh my gosh. So then the Pisrei Tshuva over there, he quotes the Machlokes HaPoskim, well, can you save hostages for more than their value if they might be killed? One opinion is yes, one opinion is no. As we've already learned in the Rishon and Tosfos, the Ramban makes its way down to the more contemporary Poskim in the Shulchan Aruch. And the Shach quotes this Bach. And that's what I was alluding to earlier, that you're allowed to pay more than the net value for your own family members. Bein, Labito, V'krova, V'chol Adam. And we don't stop them. V'ein mochin biyado. I think that's also a crucial line this evening. We're not necessarily going to stop people. Meaning, if a guy is about to redeem his daughter for 10 times amount the value, we don't stop that. We don't stop that. So now let's go to 2023. It is November 22nd, 2023. We're approaching Hanukkah in the month of Kislev. What do we say to a mother who just spoke, heard her with my own ears, a week ago on Tuesday in Washington, D.C., Alana Zaitchik? I wake up each morning to remember this truth. My family is being held hostage by terrorists. That's how she started her speech. Right? She said, you guys all have slept for the past 40 days. I have not. Chilling speech from Alana Zaitchik. Now, we obviously care about Alana Zaitchik as a Jew. But does Alana Zaitchik or Rahman al-Atslan, all of that community, it's his own community at this point, those individuals or the hostages' family members, do they get to have a say on the political decision right now, on a military decision right now? What would you say? Do they get a say? What do you think? Tani says a clear answer on this one. Anyone disagree? I'm not going to say the recording, but Tani has a very clear answer on this one. Anyone disagree with what Tani is? Anyone want to say yes or no? All right, so it seems to be that we're saying, listen, in the same way that Rachel Imenu was harping in on Yaakov's emotions, Yaakov had a backbone and said, I can't tell you that I'm God. I'm not God. And you don't get to tell God what to do. You could daven. You don't get to demand, right? Even if you're in emotional turmoil right now. Yikes. So again, the bottom line that we're going to get to soon before we swing back to Musar is that the contemporary poskim say that this sugya does not really apply to the contemporary politics of Eretz Israel. I just learned the classical mefarshim with you,
there's a Gemara in Ksuvos and Gidin, the main sugya is in Gidin. We contrasted the Rambam and Matan Asanayim from Babasra with the Maseches Gidin Makoros, right? And there's a little bit of Ksuvos also. But it's essentially Babasra is pro freeing hostages. Gidin is somewhat more qualifying, limiting the rule. And we just balanced it out a little bit. We saw in Shulchan Aruch some of the classical poskim in the Shulchan Aruch. But says Rav Shechter, this happened to Rav Huttner. He was held hostage. And they said, hey, he's one of the Gedolei Hador. He falls into one of the exceptions, right? Don't we free a hostage even for more than his value? If he's a tremendous Talmid Chacham, and there were people who were willing to pay very high prices for Rav Huttner's release. And at the time, the Gadol, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, said, no, don't, you're wrong. You know why? Because this is not a Shas Shalom. This is a Shas Melchama. When it's a Melchama, you don't look to these considerations. Because if you help the enemy in a time of war, that is unforgivable.
They're
going to
use the money.
Yeah, you're enabling the enemy. You're assisting the enemy in a time of war. And Rav Shechter, in Be'ikve Etzon Tzim Lamed Beis, writes this. And he says, Israel is in a constant state of war. That's the Chiddush LaHalacha, that we always view Israel as a constant state of war. From 1948, although there have been times of peace and times of ceasefires are made and then broken and made and broken. It's always a time of war in Israel. And therefore, we don't view the sugya of freeing hostages from Maseches Gidin. You ask Tzahal, what's the best thing to do? And by the way, in this contemporary case, the cabinet of Israel only became pro the deal once the Mossad and the IDF and the Shin Bet, all that Chevra, once they said, we are pro the hostage deal, that's when the Israeli cabinet said, okay. Not everyone in the cabinet said, okay. But only once the military and the intelligence said, it's not going to hurt us, essentially, that's when they said, okay, let's go through. But Rav Shechter says, l'halacha, you do whatever's best for the army. You do whatever's best for the war effort. Asher Weiss says the same thing. He says, you can't compare Maseches Gidin to now this. Maseches Gidin is talking about some guy who wanted to make a lot of money. So he has a business. What's his business? Instead of selling cars, he captures people. And then he sells them on the black market. And then, okay. That guy, there are rules, the regulations. That's not war. That's not war. Don't compare Hamas to people just trying to kidnap people for the sake of money. Unfortunately, traditional kidnapping was for ransom money, right? That's the traditional halacha kidnapping. That's not what we're talking about, Zev Rosher Weiss. So you can't call Chazal's takanas or experiencing. Rather, you need to ask the IDF, the military, for their 2 cents. Whoa. And that's what dictates the halacha. At the same time, Rav Asher Weiss does say that morale plays a big effort in war, right? Meaning if the chayalim know that you're going to always go after them to save them, if they are taken, so that's a big deal. What if I said every Israeli was a soldier? What if I said people live in Israel knowing that they're putting their lives on the line? People live in Sderot. They're not soldiers, but you know what? They're like soldiers. They're risking their lives to stay in Israel. People in Hebron, they know that it's very dangerous to live here. So here's my little chiddush. What if we said that in the same way we're going to go fight for our chayalim so that they fight harder knowing that we're going to come get them and rescue them? What if we said the same thing for our civilians? If you get taken captive, we will get you. We will get you. We will find you. We will rescue you. Because to some degree, every Israeli citizen is a chayal. They're defending our borders. You don't have the luxury of living in Israel as an innocent civilian versus a soldier. Everyone is doing their own role. Even the Haredim in the army, they could easily be learning in Muncie or Brooklyn or Lakewood or, everyone is doing something just by being there. So dare I say, in the same way we want to enhance the morale of the chayalim, could you argue that in the war effort, it's important to enhance the morale of the regular citizens? You hear it? Am I making sense or no? Man, the chiddush gets a thumbs up. Okay. I'm going to conclude, though, just even if we disagree with the hostages' families, and we say you can't let your emotions weigh in, we can't forget about their pain either. And everyone needs to experience a searing pain right now. Thanksgiving should be toned down this year, period. A searing pain for anyone who does not have the ability to tuck their kid in tonight. Refrained on the Parsha, Volume 2, Parsha Shmos, page 106. Similarly, during the Gulf War, one of Rav Shach's close Talmidim heard that Rav Shach could not sleep. He went to visit the Rosh Yeshiva and was shocked to see that Rav Shach was sleeping with his head resting precariously at the edge of his bed. It was not surprising that Rav Shach was not getting much sleep, but each time he dozed off, his head slipped off the bed and he woke up. Why doesn't the Rosh Yeshiva sleep with his head in the middle of the pillow? The Talmud inquired. Rav Shach's answer, Gadol Ador, Panovich Rosh Yeshiva from Bnei Brak. Many parents of Bachrim who come from Chutz La'aretz were anxious about the war and asked their children to come home, Rav Shach responded. When these boys came to ask me what to do, I told them that the Torah would protect them, and as long as they are learning, they can stay here in Eretz Yisrael. Because of my advice, Rav Shach explained, parents all over the world lie awake in bed at night, fearful for the safety of their precious children. Is it fair that they should lie awake and I should sleep? That's a Gadol Ador. Although we live in America, we can enjoy a day off of work, we cannot forget to be extremely emotionally in touch with the people who don't care about anything else right now except for seeing their family members. We should be carrying that weight on us at all times. It should affect our daily experience, whether we think it should affect the halacha or not. B'hashkafa, Chazal criticized Yaakov for not being sensitive enough to Rachel Imenu. We should all be zochet to learn from that story of Rav Shach and the Midrash to be utmost sensitive and never lose that sense of Jewish empathy, whether we agree or disagree. Let's daven, Mark.